Hello, and welcome to Strange Dominions, a show where we attempt to find the connections between the unheard, the unseen, the unknown, and the unknowable. I'm your host, Octavian Graves. Tonight, we are speaking to two guests. First, we speak with Vinsval, founder and creator of the band Mara. We discuss Thursa True, Giants, Black Metal, and so much more. Then, we speak with Kakofniks from the band Filikaus. We discuss his music, his occultism, and some of his more paranormal experiences. If you've seen something strange or unknown, such as Bigfoot, ghosts, aliens, anything in between, send me an email at strangedominionspodcast@gmail.com. That is strangedominionspodcast@gmail.com. Our Patreon is up. We do have merch for each tier. It's only $4 a month, and it goes a long way to support the show. With that, let's get into the episode. And that was Locomare from the EP and album Locomare by the band Mara. And I have with me Vinsval, founder of Mara. How are you doing?
Agalas. It's nice to finally talk to you.
Yes. I know we've been trying to put this together for a little bit here, having some technical difficulties, but I'm glad we were able to get it all set up.
Yeah, you found a solution. That's all we require right now. So
if there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly.
So why don't you start off by telling us about Mara and how the project started and just the history and the ethos surrounding it?
Yeah, that's a good question. We need to go back all the way to like 2009. The idea of Mara started more like a rebellion regarding everything. Back then I was listening to, because I was kind of unhappy what I heard, what was going on in the scene. And so something around that 2009, I decided to pick up guitar and learn to play guitar and write my own music. So the idea of Mara started right there. I didn't have a full name, but I just had an idea that I wanted to create something that I found was missing, something more primitive. And the whole foundation of Mara started from there. So and the name of Mara, where I got the name, that comes a bit later. I picked that from my own mythology. I've always been interested in mythology since I was a kid. So it was kind of easy. They found me kind of natural to pick the name Mara. I always liked the bands like Bathory. I always looked up to and Corten. I always picked like good female names for even for songs and stuff. So that was kind of attraction to me, because Mara also in Swedish is in English too. As you probably know, it goes as a nightmare, and in Swedish is mardröm. So that was kind of natural way to pick that name, Mara.
Well, it's a great name, and I think it really fits the project well. I mean, with the sound that you guys have created so far, it is very nightmarish.
Yeah, it's nice to hear. That's not what I'm looking for in my head, but I guess it's some primitive force when you talk about nightmares and fear, so said.
Well, I listened to the new album a couple times last night, and it is, I mean, it is a very dark and brooding album, but it has a lot of melody to it, and it has kind of this elegance to it that I really enjoy, because as much as I love the really hard, fast, dark-sounding black metal, I also enjoy a lot of the epic and more melodic stuff, so I think you did a really good job with that.
Yeah, I respect your opinion, and my view has never been like I'm going to do something melodic, but I guess this comes kind of natural when you, I like a lot of things that are, of course, melodic, but for me, it is more of a feeling I want to represent, and more of the galder around the music I want to produce in with music. So, difficult to tell. These come from the stomach. You need to go by your heart when you create something.
Right. And I think you got the atmosphere right on.
All right. Cool. Cool to hear.
So at least in the lyrical themes that are on your Metalum page, it's Thersatru. And I know a little bit about that. I have a pretty big interest in that myself as a Norse pagan, and enjoy kind of the more obscure aspects of Norse paganism and Norse mythology. And so I'm curious about where that started for you.
Well, like I said before, I've always been interested in Norse mythology. So if I make it kind of short with that, where it started, it will go all back to when my grandma was reading the old Norse mythology for me. And how old I was, around like 5 years to 9 years old, because it happened in the many years. So my interest started right there. And I remember before, you know, I was starting my first class, you know, first grade in Sweden, you're around 7 years old. Long before that, I already got a Thor's hammer as a present from like a kindergarten thing, because I was so interested in Norse mythology and always talked about that. So there's always been something walking with me all my life. And later years in my teens, it was something I went back to, because straight away I did something else in life and I walked back to that path. So regarding the spiritual side, like Thersatru or Urkthru or whatever people want to call their beliefs, I would say the inspiration comes, of course, a lot of from Arcanum. And that would be around when I was reading a Gullviga book. So at the same time that was released, so what can that be? This is just before I was releasing my first album, so can it be around 2012, 13, something like that? And I remember I was reading a lot about his writing in his book and a lot of his thoughts about the spiritualism and also about the Gaians and everything. And I thought it was something I was already more looking into and more interested in regarding, because I never thought like Loki and Fenrir and all of them were just evil spirits. All of them, you know, in Norse mythology or pagan mythology, in my view, is all the gods have two different sides. They are more like humans. They are bad and they are good. If you look at Odin, he's bad and good at the same time. So that goes to all other gods or spirits. They mean more how you are connecting to them. They will reflect how you are represented, or how you are, your thoughts will go back. Difficult to say now, because in my head everything's thinking from Swedish to English here, but it's more how you connect everything goes together, as I said.
I totally understand that. And, you know, one of the things that I've always felt is that because when Christianity came to Scandinavia, there was a very intent, you know, there was a very large intent to demonize the old gods, Thor, Loki, Odin, Freya, and turn them into demons because that was antithetical to the Christian philosophy and Christian mythology. And so one of the things I've always been bothered by is that a lot of neo-pagans have kind of carried on this demonization of certain gods within Norse mythology almost from like a Christian perspective. So when, you know, they see Odin and Thor as the good guys and they see Loki and Fenrir and Hel as the bad guys and the Antichrist and things like that. And for me, that's always felt kind of inaccurate. Because that, you know, the concept of dogma and duality kind of came with Christianity. That wasn't really part of the Norse mindset or the Norse philosophy when they were still able to practice their true, you know, spiritual choice. So I've always found it interesting how there's this almost Christian interpretation of Norse mythology.
Yeah, I agree with you regarding that. But you can see that everywhere, like even in Hollywood today, like
Absolutely.
How the Scandinavian gods get portrayed. So it's kind of a romantic view, I guess, around everything. And a lot of people maybe don't want to see deeper into things. And then it goes easy, you know, it's, everything is black and white. So.
Right, and I'm sure you've listened to the show enough to know that I have a somewhat of a contentious view of the Eddas, particularly the prose Edda, because that was written by an Icelandic monk who was also very big in the political scene at the time. And so, you know, that was like the 1100s or 1200s, and so being anything but a devout Christian could get you killed. And so when he was writing those, the Eddas, and his interpretation of it comes from a very Christian view. And so the gods are kind of seen as these rough and rowdy, almost anti-human characters in a way. And so I'm just always wary of, you know, where do the influences come from when it comes to these myths and legends being written down and what the intention of the author was when they were writing it down. But as far as, you know, Thursatru, how does that kind of manifest in your life and in the band?
Regarding my band, it's deeply rooted right now. It's, like I said, it's go all the back to like the first album. But it was more there. I felt a connection. I was starting more regarding that spiritual path, but it's become more like on, I think, yeah, I would be saying more on the Tears and Flame album that was deeply connected. But all my creations has always been, I put out a piece of myself. It's not just to write music or, like I said before, my own magic, my kaldr. I put a lot of effort in for myself, and it's a sacrifice. So some of the albums has been really deeply sacrificed for myself, and I've been sick and a lot of things have happened. But so, yeah, I would say it's really deeply rooted in Thursian energy. And regarding the Thursian energy and what that is, I would say to the audience, they need to look into that themselves, because there's a lot of ways to look into that.
Just as an overview, could you kind of describe, like define in your own way what Thursatru is for anyone who doesn't even know what that word means?
Yeah. Well, I can explain it from my point of view, because if you would ask some of the other authors, they would maybe say something else, but from my own view of the Thursian energy and Thursian flame, it would be that it's a more primitive side. You go deeper into yourself also, so it said. If you're going to look more, if you're going to take, for example, in mythology, Ymir, who is one of the first Thurs giants, he get killed. And he would get killed, they created the universe and the world with him. And they also created humans from Ymir. So all of us have a Thursian energy in us, like in ourselves. So I would say this more go to back to the primitive, the beginning. In today's society, there's a lot of things in our lives that got put aside or hidden for us. There could be feelings, there could be thoughts or different paths to walk in life and spirits. And I would say the Thracian flame or the Thracian energy is to bring like go rebellion all that and go back to where it all started. So be more human, so said.
I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, it's important to note, you know, like you said, that Ymir, he is the first being. The world, the entire, like, creation is made from his corpse.
Yeah.
And so I know that that's a very big deal within the Thracian mindset. Speaking of like the new EP, the new album, Locomere, can you just go into what this one represents as opposed to the earlier releases?
Yeah, I would love to do that. Because Locomere, I would say there is a more step into the word and meaning behind the motto. If you have a bit patience, I will tell you what I found and what I've put into the album, because it's not just an album. It's, like I said before, it's a spiritual journey. And all the gallery you can hear and every step on the album is thoughts through. It is not just random created. So I started to look much more deeper into the word Mara and what it really means, and not just in the Norse mythology. I was looking around the whole world and I could see a connection. And what I found out, like, the word Mara is deeply rooted in the meaning of death. And you can see it in like the Buddhism, in the Hinduism, and the ghost. All of the religions, you can see different connection, a primitive connection regarding death. If just for to do an easy example, you can just look to the Slavic folklore and the mythology, and you have a other goddess there who called Morana, but she also called Mara, but Morana. She is the goddess of winter and death. Who is the goddess of death in the Norse mythology? Yes, you have Hel. And another name for Hel is Locomere. Locomere in translation from Old Norse would be daughter of Loki. And if you take that word, so the name Locomere, and if you heard in the end, Mare, it's the English translation of Mara, mare, like nightmare. So you can hear that the word Mara still exists there in that name. And like I said before, regarding Mara and Morana and Hel, all of them have something together, something connected, and that is death, and that is a goddess. Even if you go further, in Sweden and in Norse words or language, we have something called Marur. And there we're talking about more than one witch, we can say Marur. So I would say all of those different goddesses, excuse me there, they have something together, and that's regarding Marur. So the word Mara has a big foundation regarding witches, spirituality, and death. And that was something I really want to go deeper into and bring up, because even in Norse mythology in Scandinavia, Mara has been like forgotten. It's more like you talk like more like a fairy tale about a nightmare, but the root is much deeper and it's much more primitive connected. that was something I want to bring up and show that all this has a tertian connection.
And it's definitely felt. And I would definitely agree with everything you said, especially about death, because I think that death is a very, I mean, it's everywhere. It's every, you know, and I think in modern times, we really run away from it and we try and bury it as much as possible. Whereas our ancestors, you know, they embraced it because it was a part of their daily life. And so I think being able to look it in the face and not be afraid of it and to explore it in a philosophical way, in a spiritual way, is a really important foundation for anybody.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that is something you never can come away from. And especially in these times it's been now with sickness and things around us, I just feel that also bigger connection regarding Mara in everything. So for me, it was kind of natural to go this direction. And that was something I really wanted to put out in the album. And that's why if you start looking like from the cover that put like 100 hours of just doing creating the album cover, it like goes together with the word Luca Mare Mara. That's why like the logo is slashed in the middle, because I want to present that they are the same. And you can also find around the album cover like Mara written in different ways in bind runes and also in separate runes. And you can also find other bind runes connecting to Hel. So that's why I tried to connect all this together, for example, in the album cover, but also regarding the Galdere on the album, and also all the names. You can see like the titles of the album. You can see a connection there too, because all of them represent something with a witch or the female spirituality that goes to back to the tertian energy.
And about, I mean, talking about a witch and witches, magic and, you know, occultism is obviously a big part of it. And so I'm curious about some, you know, within your Thursian practice and just in your general life, how has, you know, magic and sorcery kind of manifested?
Yeah, in many ways, really. And some of them would, for some people, maybe just, you know, brush them off from the shoulders, say, ah, this is nothing. But from my view, it's been really big things. For example, before we went to do the music video for Mara, I was out in the woods and I did a blute with my girlfriend. And that was the first time we ever did a blute together. And I can say that they ended really bad. I was trying to connect with the Hel as like a sacrifice before the music video for everything would go well and also show honor for her. And it ended up we both of us got really fucking sick. So I was still sick when we were going to do the music video. I had like super high fever, so I had to take like 5 different painkillers just to be there on the set to do the music video. And the funny also regarding the music video, we picked up a special spot in Sweden. It was like a big cave. We were the only like extreme metal band ever been playing or doing a music video there. and then they were like asking us like straight out, like, you guys not going to do any rituals or stuff when you go down? Ah, sure, man, we're not going to do anything. We were fucking lying, but that's how it goes. Yeah, I ended up well, and I'm really happy with the results. But around that music video, I was totally fucking sick because like I said, everything went not so as it planned. Everything went the opposite, and something I learned from that.
Well, I need to watch the music video, But yeah, I've been in a similar situation where we were recording a demo for a project that I was a part of, and I don't know what I had, but it's like the most sick I've ever been, and I kind of felt like if I channeled how crappy I felt into the music, that would make the music feel, you know, sound better and sound more akin to what we were trying to do at the time. And with that project, that was probably one of the best releases we ever made. And so I definitely feel there's a correlation between, you know, how the musician or how the artist is physically feeling and how they're mentally feeling when it comes to how the music ends up sounding.
Yeah, but if what you are saying now, what you did also there, you did a personal sacrifice. You sacrificed something of yourself to make that recording, and that's magic.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that rings true with the Norse pantheon, because as we know, Odin, the way he discovered the meaning of the runes was by sacrificing himself to himself on the, you know, hanging himself from the branch of Yggdrasil and, you know, impaling himself with a spear. So sacrifice is a very big part of the Norse ethos and the Norse pantheon.
Yeah, it is. We can see it in a lot of different ways also, not just in Odin, but they exactly what it's saying. You need to give something to give back something. That's how it goes.
And, you know, and then you could get into Tyr and Fenrir and him giving Fenrir his hand and Fenrir biting it off. And that was kind of a sacrifice to keep Fenrir bound. So, yeah, it's a very prevalent concept within the whole sphere of Norse mythology. When you're practicing Thursa Tru and your Thursian spirituality, do you ever encounter any kind of weird things or what we would call paranormal when it comes to that?
Yes and no. I will go to the no answer and then I will go to the yes answer.
Fair
first
enough.
With the no answer is I don't see any figure or something like that standing in front of me when I'm doing my Blut or Galder, but I can feel the energy. I know that you have some other musicians and other magical people on there before here, and you do an interview with, and I remember some of them said also the same as what I can say now. It is that is you can like hear owl, or you can maybe suddenly a fly comes middle of the winter. A lot of this stuff happened to me all the time. Like, you know, when it's middle of the winter here in Sweden, it's like 10 degrees cold. So there's no fucking flies here. All of them are dead. So where did this fly come from? How suddenly is this fly in the room? Stuff like that. But if we're going to go back to what I would say is more a spiritual meeting, that would go back all the way before I decided the name of my band Mara. And I remember I woke up middle of the night and there was a face in my roof. And what I remember, it was like a shaved face and it looked like a man. And he was screaming. He was screaming at me. I cannot move. I was like stuck in my bed and I tried to move. I cannot go anywhere. I cannot say anything. I was stuck. But it felt like forever. But it was probably just a couple of seconds. But it felt forever. And, you know, back in the time, I got frightened, of course. And like, what the fuck happened? But I just dropped that and was not thinking so much about it. There's many years now later, I've been thinking about it, and I think it is, of course, it's a connection, because I was thinking back then to use the name Mara. I have not decided to use the name Mara in my project yet, but I got a connection with her, but it manifested for me as a man, and I don't know why, but as Mara, she is a shapeshifter too, So she can go in different forms. She doesn't need to go just like a female form.
And I think that, I know that, you know, if you had asked a psychologist about what you experienced, they would tell you you experienced the old hag syndrome, and they would say that it is like a psychological issue. It's something with the brain. And that definitely does happen. But from the research that I've been doing, because I've actually interviewed a couple people now who have had what we would call a sleep paralysis incident that was connected to their magical dealings and their occult actions. And so I think that when that stuff happens, it could be something from the brain, but it also could be something reaching out to you, something completely external, such as a god or a goddess or even a Jotun. And so that definitely does happen. And I think that it, like you said, she's a shapeshifter. And so she is probably going to, in a lot of these entities will come to you, you know, they come, if they're coming for a woman, they're going to present themselves as a woman because it's familiar. If you're coming for a man, then they're going to present themselves as a man because it's familiar, and they need that familiarity to get you to respond in a way. Because if it was completely foreign to you, then you would just, you know, brush it off or run away from it as fast as you could. But the fact that, you know, it was a man and it obviously had significance for you, and now that you are kind of, you know, in a way worshiping them with your music and with your own occult dealings, it definitely worked if that was the intended result.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that maybe could have had a lot to do with fear. I would maybe not react the same today, but back then it was a lot of fear because it was something new, an entity that like I never met before, and I felt the power. That's why I couldn't say or do anything. I was totally paralyzed. And but like I said, I think it had to do with a lot of the fear. That's why I saw a man and maybe not a woman. So today, if I was having the same experience, maybe I would see the woman.
Definitely, definitely. And so do the other members of the band all practice Thirtatru, or is that just your thing that you do with the music and with your own spiritual practice?
If you are playing in Mara, you will have Thursa energy around you, whatever you don't want it or not, because that's what I put in and what is where I created. So whatever... What the rest of the band do and with the spirituality, I believe in individualism, so I cannot force them what they're gonna believe in, what they're gonna do in spiritualism. But like I said, they are playing with me, so there will be, of course, they need to be okay with that. It's something they can stand behind. And so I would say yes, all of them have something to do with Thirtatru. Yes.
Have they ever experienced anything weird or kind of manifestations of the Thursian entity in their own lives?
Yes, some of them have and some have not. So far, what I can say, of course, all of this need to be questioned regarding all the people themselves so they can say their own view. But like I said, when I started to reflect, a lot of things have happened. Before, I was playing with Vrede. He played bass in the Mara. He played also in Myrd, a really good Danish musician. But before we were going to record the Rök album, who I want to go much more deeper into Ragnarök. Vrede has always had some own demons inside of him he needed to fight. And there was a time he had so much demons, so he was away for 6 months, locked up, because, yeah, there was a lot of things happening for him. And I think they had to do a lot of things, because there was the same time I was writing everything around the Rök album, and I put so much... Yeah, deeply sacrifice of myself into that. And I think they also reflected him and reflected also Ingleborgas too, but in different ways. What I know about the bandmates today, that a lot of them have said that they had nightmares and they have met something they cannot really explain what it is. And for me, that was kind of easy. That was Mara. So,
well, that's really interesting.
I would like to add a different view also here, and that would say that my girlfriend is very much a spiritual person, and she's had a lot of connection to the other side. And long before even we met each other, the thing is, when I meet people, I don't say which band I play, and I don't say I'm a musician.
I'm the same way. I don't usually say that right out loud in the beginning either.
Yeah, because I think that people should find out themselves music and not be, you know, oh, I know these guys, so I need to listen to this. I don't really care about that. I think that people should go on their own path and find their own music. That's why I don't say stuff like this. And usually I try out also. If I started dating a girl, I used to try out, you know, I don't say I'm playing a band and say I do create music, anything like that, until maybe we've seen each other for a while, and then I play an album and I say, like, oh, what do you think? Do you like this album or not? And if they say, like, oh, this is a shitty music, and then I say, okay, it's my band. And the opposite also, if like, oh, this is really good, okay, this is my band. But whatever. It's a long time before I had said to her I played in Mara. She had the, like, nightmares. And she told me that she had to meet this woman, and she had runes all over her face and different runes. The funny thing is, she's from a different culture, so she has nothing to do with Norse mythology. Of course, she has probably read about it and found about it, but she's not even rooted in Thursian energy. And she had met this woman many times since then, and it's the same woman. And I think that's deeply connected to my spiritualism. So, you know, a woman to another woman, they can easily be jealous. So so I think that she had a meeting with Mara in those cases.
Well, and I think that's a pretty common thing when... You know, if someone is not into someone else's certain spiritual path, when they spend enough time with that person, their spiritual path kind of, I don't want to say infects, but definitely mixes into their own. And it can be very unexpected and kind of a jarring experience. So that's really interesting that has happened to you and to the people that are involved with your music and the energy that the music creates.
Yeah. I don't know. Everything is just translation would be like representation of what I put in and what I do. Every time something like this happens, is I'm not trying to look for, you know, oh, this is a reason to why all this, and, you know, try to find reasons for how things are. A lot of this I've been thinking about a long time after everything happened. And then I've been like, yeah, they have a connection. There is probably a connection here. Even I didn't see it then, but I see it now. Everything is not a straight line. It's been like really, really round all over the place, you know, before I figure out something. So
I'm trying to find, because there is a an account from a couple of years ago that I'm trying to find, because I want to read it and I want to get your thoughts. But while I'm finding it, could you just talk a little bit about what is the general consensus in Sweden and in the black metal scene in Sweden? Because obviously Sweden is heavily connected to black metal. Is there any kind of a Thursian community, or is the old gods in general, do they still get venerated within the more alternative scenes in Sweden?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, but I will put my view on it, of course. I don't know if it's a Thursian scene. Maybe it is. I know some people that are like me, they are inspired about the Thursian energy, but also, like I would say, that even the author... That I would say, for me, the author goes back to Arcanum. And even he says, like, you need to find your own way. This is not like a Bible for you to just go through exactly how I do things. This is how I found the things. And there's something I go back to there with the individualism. For me, it's black metal is individualism. It's not about being a group. It's not about going the same path like everybody else. It's about going your own path. And this is something I don't see and it's more connected in the Scandinavian scene at all. Everybody's doing the same. And then, of course, someone can point at the finger saying, you do what economy doing, or you do something else. Yeah, sure. I have influences from many ways, like Burzum and Bathory and Arcanum. But I put all of my own energy and magic into my own creation. And that's what I would say is something primitive and more ghost. That's why it goes more like individualism. To do something that nobody have done ever before in black metal would be, maybe you can do that, but it's really difficult at this time. And I would say you're kind of blindfolded if you believe that you will do something nobody else has done before, and you're also pissing on everybody else what they've done. I'm not doing that. I'm trying to honor what started with black metal, and I'm trying to honor everybody what they've done and what the people I look up to. So I'm totally fine to be inspired by them.
Well, it definitely comes through on your own, like your own taste on it. But I can hear a little bit of Arcanum. I can hear the Bathory influence. I mean, Franz Marder is one of my favorite black metal albums of all time. And but you do a very good job of kind of separating yourself with your contemporaries and kind of creating your own sound while also having that honoring of past bands come through very clearly.
I'm happy to hear that, I would say. There's something, for me, it's very personal. There's something I think is really important. but also, if you go back to your question there regarding the Swedish scene and Scandinavian scene, I don't know how things really look in Norway and Finland, because I'm heavily rooted here in Sweden, but in the Swedish scene, I would say there's a few bands that I would lift up and say they are, for me, something to take seriously. But there's a lot of bands that I don't want to even bring them up because they're not even worth to bring up, if I would say like that.
I totally understand that. I found the article here, and so I'm going to read this to you, and I just want to get your thoughts, okay?
All right.
So, two Swedes are in a nearby woods when they begin to hear strange noises around them. They suddenly experience an orb sighting, followed by an attack by an unseen beast or force. So the account goes like this: a friend and I went to the woods to barbecue over a fire, as we do now, and then all year round. I live in Stockholm, Sweden, and the woods we go to lies next to a lot of apartments in Gubengand. I'm sure I'm butchering that. I apologize. I've always been into the Sasquatch Bigfoot subject, and I know it is real. We have them here in Sweden as well. What people refer to as trolls here is the same as Bigfoot or Sasquatch, some being different names. However, my friend and I went into the woods to a specific place we always go to when we make our fire and barbecue and drink beer. After a while, when the fire was started, I grabbed a big stick and went to a tree and knocked it hard 3 times. 10 minutes pass, and further into the woods, we see this orb just appear and hover for about 3 meters off the ground. I stared at it, and I think to myself that this is not a person with a flashlight or anything like that at all. The orb just hovered at the same spot and then disappeared. I thought to myself, weird shit is about to go down. Time passes and darkness has fallen over the woods. We sit in front of the fire when we hear a weird noise. My friend asks if I heard that. I looked over the fire and into the darkness and saw two yellow eyes glowing into the darkness staring at us. I said, "Do you see those glowing eyes staring at us?" He confirmed that he did. "This is not a human or an animal," I said, and he agreed. We stared at it for another 30 seconds when it suddenly moves away, almost floating, leaving traces from the glowing eyes. I was creeped out. 1 week later, we go to the same spot and it's dark. The fire is lit when we suddenly start to hear tree breaks from the woods. Thick tree breaks. It starts from the left and moves to the right and circles around us. The tree breaks keep moving around us and get closer and then quiet for a few minutes. All of a sudden, 15 meters to the right of us, a big tree breaks, echoes through the woods. My friend quickly stood up when this 5-meter-long log crashes into a big rock behind us. Suddenly, something then appears behind us and smashes the log and another log. We jump back and move away. This thing hit the upper part of the log, which means that this thing was huge and strong as hell. My friend turns on the flashlight and looks around. We see nothing, and it's quiet. When we walked around in the woods, we were loud as hell, twigs breaking and tons of other sounds around our feet. But this thing moves fast, silently around us. That's the scary part as well. We were scared as hell and quickly left. One time while I was walking on a track, two stones came flying from above and lands in front of me. I look up into the trees and see this transparent shaped thing in the trees and then it just disappears. So the reason I wanted to bring that up to you is because in America, you know, we have Bigfoot and Sasquatch, which a lot of people believe to be like a gorilla or just a natural animal that lives in the woods. But my feeling is that it has a lot more spiritual connotations to it. And I would even go as far as to say that the Jotun or the Thursian energy is very strong with this creature. And I'm just curious what you would think of that. And what I read and what your interpretation is of that.
Yeah. What I heard from the story you told me, that I found most interesting was the energy. I don't remember if you said it was any footprints.
No, they didn't say if there was any footprints. They didn't see anything either. They just saw glowing eyes, and then they heard a lot of loud crashing, and whatever was breaking these logs must have been really strong because they hit a very thick part of the log.
Hmm. Yeah. There could be a lot of different things, and I don't know. My view on that is, because I was not there, so I wouldn't say so much regarding it. Like I said before, my connection goes always to something I created or something I do with magic. So I would say go easy back to that. So I don't know these people, if they're any practicer in any sort of Thursian energy or something like that. And it seems more like they were normal people. You went out and met something they didn't know what it was. And if there was something with a giant or folklore in Scandinavia, a troll or whatever, yeah, sure, it could be. I really don't know what to say about this, really.
Okay, I totally understand that. I think I'm curious about the concept of these creatures from folklore, like giants and trolls, if they can manifest themselves in our reality and interact with us. And if you've ever kind of had any kind of experience with that, especially as someone who works with the Thursian energy on a regular basis.
No, I never had any. Like I said before, I have connections. Like I said, a flyer comes middle of the winter, or a candle started to move suddenly different. It's not from me breathing on it. I'm alone in the room or alone in the woods, and there's no wind or stuff like that. Or you can feel a sudden freeze in your spine, you know, when you get frightened, it goes back to your emotion of running and hiding. But you're paralyzed and you still sit in the air and wait, and you can feel that there's something there. It's more like the energy like that that would be felt and connected to seeing stuff like that. No, I have not. So I can say also I've always been really interested. I always wanted like meet a ghost and stuff like that. I've been sleeping a lot of haunted places. Never seen a ghost. I know I'm a spiritual person because I'm working with it, but I guess some things even are for me like hidden or closed, and there can be many different reasons. So maybe it was the right person at the right time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. One thing that I've always found interesting is that there's a lot of aspects of Norse mythology that a lot of people who practice today seem to either forget about or just don't mention. I mean, when we look at the Eddas and we see Ragnarok, the way that that prophecy was foretold was because Odin went to hell and basically performed a necromantic rite and raised a witch from the dead and basically interrogated her on events that were going to happen within Yggdrasil and Asgard and the realm of the gods. And she told him about Ragnarok and how the giants were going to rise up and defeat the gods, and that would be the end of the world, so to speak. And so it's interesting to me that that doesn't get as talked about as much as some of the other stories within the mythology. But aside from that, I'm curious, because now the Thursian stuff, the Thursian concept, it doesn't really have a lot to do with the anti-cosmic Satanist philosophy, but it is connected in some ways. And I'm curious if you've ever encountered that while working within the Thursian sphere.
Yes, I would say. I think it has a root together, because if you know a little bit behind the scenes, and also I also read MLU's Mesanthropic Luciferian Order, the Liber Aseratu. Well, maybe I pronounced it wrong there, but I just say it from my head. The Jon and Edvard in the section was really into. And when you read that and you also read the Gulliver book, I can see a lot of connection to each other. I would say the primitive energy is the same. It's a lot of what I said before about the individualism and also the black flame, so to say, the Thursian flame, I would say. There's a lot to do with just finding the primitive force and go back to where everything started. But I think that is already heavy rooted in paganism, that everything goes more to the individualism and the primitive side. I don't say that people in the past only worship themselves and only was, you know, never had anything with the group. But what I try to say with the individualism is, if, for example, in a band or people meet on a, for example, on a festival, or in back in the days, so we're meeting, gathering for maybe a war, they were also gathering there for individualism purposes. And that goes then when they meet is as a group. You are worshiping different entities. Oh, sorry there. And different gods, and it could go different where you walked or where you were in Scandinavia. That was never the same. But if you look at a lot of other religions, and especially Arabic religions, or Abrahamic religion, then you can see that everybody needs to think and see the same and everything. And then it's not the individualism anymore, because you're not thinking by yourself. And that I would say is with the Satanists more, Thursa through that will go, that foundation of individualism is the same.
I definitely see that. And I would definitely agree. I've always had I'm not an anti-cosmic Satanist, and that's never really been my choice, my path. But I definitely am interested in it, and I see the connections between that and a lot of other different spiritual practices. So it's all very interesting. We're about to wrap up, Vinsval, but is there anything you wanted to mention before we ended?
No, not really. I would say that it's been a great honor to talk to you, and been really interesting, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me to hear. I definitely want to have you back on the show to do a roundtable about music and black metal and occultism, and I think you'd really enjoy that.
Yes, I was looking forward to that, so absolutely.
And all right, well, Vinsval, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I want you to have a great night.
The same, and let the Thirst and Flame burn with you.
Amen. All right, well, you have a good night.
The same.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And that was my conversation with Vinsval. That was really fascinating, and I'm very, very interested in the Thursian mindset and philosophy, and I'd really like to have more people who follow that spiritual path on the show to talk about the connections between giants and the paranormal and everything else that comes with that. Next, we speak with Cacophonix about all sorts of things, including black metal occultism and some very strange shadow experiences. And tonight, I am with Cacophonix from the band Vini Kaus. That was his track, Rise, Engulf, and Venom. How are you doing, Cacophonix?
Couldn't be better. Glad to be here.
Awesome. I'm glad to have you. I know we tried this before, and we just had a whole bunch of complications, so I'm glad we're able to do it again.
Can't trust technology, but I trust you to give us a great interview and a great conversation.
Well, that's a heavy load, but I'll do my best. So let's start off with where you come from, how you got into music, and where the Vili Kaus story starts.
Okay. Well, I started playing cello when I was 9 years old. My whole family does music or did music in some capacity. Like, they're classical musicians. I have an opera singing brother, viola teacher mom, a dad who used to play French horn. So music is something I was always kind of surrounded by. Grew up listening to classic rock like the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and The Who and stuff like that. Stuff you raise your kids on properly. So I started playing cello in 2001, just dated myself, around age 9. The irony is that was the month 9/11 happened, September 2001. So I'm not going to claim that was a direct influence, but certainly a correlation of, my entire musical journey being sort of spanning the dumpster fire that is the 21st century so far. And, so I also started playing guitar shortly after. I'm not a great guitar player. I mostly just play rhythm and chords. It's more of a songwriting tool for me. Cello is the only instrument I claim to be any good at. But, you know, apart from, you know, being a classically trained cellist, I always wanted to play rock and eventually like heavy metal. Like I got into bands like God Forbid and Arch Enemy and Children of Bodom and of course Apocalyptica and stuff when I was in high school. And I went off to college for a cello performance program. And one summer I decided to start recording cello tracks, you know, in a black metal format in my bedroom. That was the summer I discovered Dissection. And Dissection is kind of the band that I sort of modeled my artistic framework after. Like I always got the sense they were really onto something, but I couldn't quite put my finger on why. Like, you know, I wasn't quite able to articulate Satan as being the thing that it was, even though it was pretty explicit. I always knew that they were onto something in a more ambiguous sense. And so I named the band Vehicles, which is Norwegian for To Rest in Chaos. I know that, you know, Dissection is a Swedish band, but I was 19 and trying to be cult. So I thought Norwegian was the way to go. Years later when we, the band played with Hordem Rafe, that's when I discovered that Vil with the E at the end of Vil is sort of the active, like to rest in chaos, as opposed to just this, the passive, like singular rest or resting. So it really, it kind of means a more active, like to rest in chaos or resting in chaos in like an ongoing sense. So, I started doing that in my bedroom with the, you know, beat up old USB mic and GarageBand essentially, and started doing my version of what I considered black metal on cello, entirely acoustic. And then I went back to school and I changed my major from cello performance to music composition. And the first piece I played was a Hvili Kals piece at a conservatory recital. The piece, what is it? To Chisel Fate. The piece to Chisel Fate, which, you know, in retrospect could be interpreted as having a Luciferian meaning. And that was the very first conservatory composition I performed. And so Hvili Kals was sort of a vehicle for me to become a student composer. And after that point, of course, I wrote, you know, a variety of other music, but I also began doing session work with other bands. As a session cellist, I had the first metal session job I did was this band in Ohio called Curse the Gods. They're sort of a folky black and death metal band from Ohio. And they had me play on a song called Wenches, Ale, and Herb, of all things. And that was my first session job. And so I started, you know, branching out and doing stuff for my friends. Hvili Kals sort of evolved as sort of the main vehicle for my conservatory studies at the time. And I got mixed up in other bands. Like I joined another. So I was effectively putting Hvili Kals on hiatus while I was in another band. Sort of a Black and Death, like Dimmu Borgir, styled. I couldn't help but say Dimmu Borgir, but sort of a Dimmu Borgir styled band that I was in, and I was doing the orchestrations for that. But eventually I had to return to Hvili Kals because that was my real like personal outlet. And it was during that time that, you know, towards the end of college, going into grad school, that I took LSD with my friend. And I had been a practicing Catholic up until that point, but that was effectively the end of that. We can go into what that LSD trip entailed, but what, you know, in the short version is that opened my eyes to the fact that my actual worldview was much more aligned with the Luciferian ideals and the black metal music that I loved as so much. And I, you know, got a grimoire by Michael W. Ford, the Adversarial Light, Magic of the Nephilim. That was my first grimoire. Before even I read LaVey, I read Ford. And then some other friends suggested I read Crowley and Peter J. Carroll, the, you know, Liber Null and Psychonaut. So I was introduced to chaos magic at the time. And pretty much from that point forward, Hvili Kals took on the intent of, you know, a Luciferian orthodox black metal band, albeit in like a chamber music cello driven format. And so since we don't have lyrics, effectively what I have been doing with that is composing the magical meanings into the pieces themselves. And the string of albums that could be said to really have a true magical intent that is really concrete would be the Agioso Fotia album that came out in 2017, the Black Morning Winter Green album that came out at the end of 2019, right, you know, December 2019. And the there's a split I did with a former bandmate called Never Without the Pentagram. The piece you played is from that. And current album I'm working on, the Lower Order Manifestations, is based on the Codex Verorum by my friend Kane. And, you know, you've had him on your show. And I imagine we'll be getting into all those albums, but effectively that's, at least from an artistic and magical standpoint, the Bilikal Saga. I could get into the shows we've played and, you know, your more typical, like, band story stuff. But in terms of the evolution of what Bilikal is, I think that pretty much hits the nail on the head.
At what point did you really get into magic? Like, what time did, like, would you consider yourself, like, a practicing occultist?
End of college, when I started getting into Michael W. Ford's writings, when I started discovering other left-hand path systems and working that into my music, so about 2015.
Okay, very cool. And so what would you say has been the, what has your experience has been with occultism, both within your music and, like, outside and just your daily life?
Well, within the music, it's become sort of a vehicle for, you know, a strange sense of self-exploration and also processing the events in the world around me, and, you know, happenings in the world around me. It's been sort of an extra layer of interpretation that I didn't previously have, and also a way to give my own music a bite it didn't previously have. Effectively, I'm confronting the listener with a causal rumblings in ways that they're probably not used to. But the experience itself has been mostly self-exploratory and also sort of like self-punitive in a way, particularly with the Codex Verorum and the most recent stuff. That's been very, it's been very much a process of ripping the Band-Aid off. it's also in the previous records, it was much more sort of exploring various levels of consciousness, exploring a night side awareness. There's definitely been correspondences and events that have happened in my life, you know, in correlation with the magic I'm making through the music. In terms of like my day-to-day existence, it's been sort of a trial and error experience, you know, trying different meditations, trying different invocations, trying to find a way to, you know, work it into or around my mundane life has been a challenge. But with the music, it's intrinsically like inseparable.
And I think that would probably go pretty far for a lot of people who are especially within the black metal genre and also in occultism. I think that's a pretty universal feeling.
Perhaps. I mean, the longer I've been in and around black metal, I don't think that that's necessarily a universal feeling. There are the, you know, black metal is hate, black metal is war, black metal is intolerance. You know, there's the people who have a much more materialistic understanding of what the genre means. Do you know the type well, I'm sure. I'd find the people in black metal circles who have a concretely occult understanding of it are probably in the minority, at least today.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that.
But, you know, I'm not really interested in being in the majority. I'd much rather find ways to separate myself from what's conventionally understood as, you know, how an artistic form should be performed. Like, I philosophized and conceptualized a lot about black metal. Like, when I was taking LSD, there's a saying that sort of came to me as we were listening to, you know, Dissection and Goat Horror and Hate and all those bands that have a clear Luciferian intent behind them. The saying that came to me was, black metal is a call to arms to awaken, a primal call to arms to awaken the higher intellect, that which, when personified, is Satan. Satan as the opposer of the status quo. Satan as the opposer of herd-like thinking. Satan as the opposer of complacency. And the the sentence once again is, black metal is a primal call to arms to awaken the higher intellect, that which, when personified, is Satan. That was repeated to me over and over in my head during my ride on the magic school bus, as it were. And I found that the people in black metal who actually see it in those terms are very rare, and they're to be, you know, for lack of a better word, cherished as compatriots and people you can learn from. And as I get older, I learn more and more that maybe that's not what all black metal is, but that is certainly what Vehicles is. And that is certainly what the bands that we align ourselves with, such as Grave Gnosis or Resurrectionist or other orthodox occult black metal bands that see it in those terms. Those are the people that we, those are the entities, the bands, the artists that we find ourselves the most aligned with. And, but that's not necessarily limited to a genre. That's a concrete artistic and spiritual approach.
Understandable. And you brought up Kane and Grave Gnosis. Can you talk a little bit about your work with them and how that all came to be?
Oh, well, that has been a long and interesting journey. So, you know, Kane and Scarlet, who really are Grave Gnosis, you know, it's the two of them, effectively. You know, they're two of my best friends that I've never actually hung out with, because they live all the way in Florida, and I'm here in Southern California. And we've never actually hung out in person, but we have talked extensively, and we've shared a lot of experiences in the ways that you can distantly. And, you know, they're great people. They are very wise people. They're people who have experiences and insight that I would absolutely recommend anyone with a strong stomach to learn from. And they've accompanied me on a lot of my own personal insights and evolutions. And when I was working on the Agios of Photia album in 2017, I had an experience of being possessed by Karanzon. My previous band that I'd been in didn't really, you know, that relationship didn't end well. And I was mad at one member in particular. So I was at a bonfire with my friends for someone's birthday. And we were sort of throwing things into a fire that we wanted to rid ourselves of. So, of course, I brought all my merch from my old band and was like, you know, let's just burn all of it. And, you know, as one does. And the mistake I made, though, is I didn't really have a concrete understanding of what Karanzon was. I only understood Karanzon as the demon of dispersion. So I'm like, oh, I want to disperse this stuff. Let's throw it all into the fire. And then I summoned Karanzon, thinking that would, you know, enhance my intent. And of course, the opposite happened, is Karanzon latched onto my head and started just feeding on these obsessive, angry aspects of my psyche until I became bloated to the point where I could no longer control it. And it took on a literal physical life of its own. There was this actual part of my psyche that was operating independently. And I couldn't control it. And it was scary and infuriating, all known of the above. And so Kane was one of the people I talked to, because I didn't know a ton of people in the occult at the time. And he gave me some notes as to what to do. And I made the piece known as Vessel 333, which is effectively the... I made this very angry, raucous, you know, acoustic, noisy, twisted song, and put all my own sewage into that. And then I asked some friends to submit their submit their own spoken word samples of negative experiences they'd had or negative thoughts that were, you know, pervading their own consciousness, to, you know, submit spoken word samples to put into the piece. And all of this was pretty overwhelming when I actually got the submissions, because, you know, people gave some really, really, really messed up experiences. Like, there were multiple people who talked about wanting their family members to die. There was actually one guy who said that his he got into a physical fight with his dad and almost killed him because his dad was abusive. And there was a girl who talked about getting raped. There were people who shared all manner of nasty experiences, up to and including someone who just hated his job at Walmart. And, like, just the slog of the working American who hates his job at Walmart and sees no rhyme or reason to this drudgery we call life. And largely this piece and the approach I took was informed by the notes that Kane gave me. I forget the specifics of the notes, but I know that his advice was heeded. And when I was done with the piece, what I effectively did was transferred Karanzon into it to give a, you know, sort of a vat of, like I said, psychic sewage that Karanzon could feed off of. And I recall this worm thing. I one of my previous occultist friends who has, like, seeing capabilities saw a worm thing attached to my head that was just feed, just, you know, sucking my brain dry. And as I recall, I actually saw this worm bug entity that was Karanzon sort of wriggle off my head and was all fat and happy about it, you know, like everything I'd been giving. I was like, wow, Karanzon is stoked. Like, I must have done something right. And so that's where Karanzon, or at least my Karanzonic, you know, apparition lives now, is in that piece. We will never play that piece live. So that was my first real interaction with Kane. Then about a year goes by, and Kane and Scarlett invite me to perform session cello on their album Lux Negretto for Gravenosis. And the ritual notes were already done. The songs were effectively already done. I took a very conservative approach musically with that album. I was effectively, you know, mirroring and harmonizing with the keyboards and the guitars. I wasn't doing anything too adventurous, but I really dove into the ritual notes. And that was my first direct experience with the system present in the Codex Aversum and the unfolding experience of Vedantic Nihilism. And shortly thereafter, we can talk more about this later, but I had been previously, you know, sort of peripherally mixed up with the Order of Nine Angles. And then while I was working on that piece, or that album rather, all those attachments fell apart. It all just completely was reduced to ashes at my feet and at the feet of the entity that I learned to be Moloch, who, you know, devours children and devours the inner child and devours childish things. And I, you know, later when the album was done, because I had been working up to do an initiation into the Order of Nine Angles, I took that date and instead did an offering to Moloch, and I cut into my forehead, you know, to open up my third eye and do the blood offering. And what I saw was this heavy gravitational pull towards, you know, the bowl, the burning altar of Moloch, and also what could only be described as a paradoxical violent peace. I have no other word for it. And that was my first real immersive elongated experience with Codex Aversum and the Vedantic Nihilism system. This is before the book was even published. And so fast forward to 2020 into, you know, 2021 and now this new year, I have been working on and actually participated in the writing process of the next Gravenosis record, Pestilence Crowned. And that has been its own crazy experience, as well as working on through the system with the lower order of Moloch for the next Vilikos record called Lower Order Manifestations. And we're releasing a teaser of this soon. You kind of heard it first here. in the form of a split EP between Grave Gnosis and Habilikos, called Towards the Nameless Darkness. And that is going to include teasers of each of two tracks from each album, effectively. And these workings have continued to sort of rip the Band-Aid off for me, and you know, things that just need to die in my life have fallen into the dust heap and been ground to dust, and it's been painful. It's been uncomfortable. It's been disconcerting, and it's all entirely necessary. And that's really my final word on my experience with the Grave Gnosis Coven and the Grave Gnosis system.
Very cool. Some of the other albums that you've done, they all kind of have their own occult practice tied into them. Can you talk about some of the other albums and the practices that are in detailed within?
So the first Habilikos record that actually has a concrete occult meaning was written during my undergraduate years, and that's Black Morning, Winter Green. That wasn't released until 2019. It took me the better part of a decade to complete. And that's effectively a three-movement cello choir piece that I wrote in an entirely stream of consciousness state. I would like hold myself away in a practice room in the conservatory until 5 a.m. while everyone else was out partying and getting crunk and what have you. And the I did plenty of that too. I'm not innocent. I did college like everyone else. But there were those nights when I you know, was just holed up until all hours of the morning working on music. And I was able to reach sort of a trance state and interact with this distinctly feminine shadow something. And again, I was still a nice Catholic boy at the time. I didn't understand exactly what I was interacting with. But the stream of consciousness writing revealed to me after the fact that this was in fact Hikati. This makes sense as Hikati because she, you know, welcomes peculiar lost wanderers. She does have a dark but kindly presence. She basically rules an underworld or nightside domain with a firm but just hand. And it is a three movement work. So you have the Maiden Mother Crone there. And the piece flows as sort of a continuous trifecta. And the occult meanings within the music themselves can only really be explained by listening to the album again, because it was just entirely stream of consciousness. And there is a spoken word outro that was performed. I wrote the words, but it was performed by my friend Holly Fox from Canada, who hosts the radio show Diabolus Templum.
Can I just stop you right there?
Yeah.
So Holly Fox and I know each other because my very first band, we got our start kind of because she played us on her radio show. And I never thought I would ever hear that name again, because it's been a long time since me and her have spoken, but we were good friends back in the day. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, she's super cool. And she is on the album. She performs the spoken word outro. And the wording there effectively refers to this Lady Darkness that I knew after the fact was Hikati. And it describes me, or what is but isn't me, sort of this nightside consciousness disappearing into this dark embrace. And again, this isn't something that you would expect from a practicing Catholic at the time, but lo and behold, these things presented themselves to me, and so they came into the album. And that, you know, that's really the first truly occult Habilikos working, even though it wasn't released until 2019. It's very old in terms of how long the band has been a thing. There's also the Agiosophotia album in 2017, and that does come with some baggage. We have our sketchy, problematic claim to fame, as it were, in terms of the fact that, yes, I'll admit this, I'll talk about this. You know, the best way to deal with for lack of a better word, problematic things in one past is to just openly admit like what you did and didn't do. And so I was involved at the time with the Order of Nine Angles. And I will state for the record that I was never a Nazi. I never held Nazi ideals, and I did not believe Nazism or white supremacy or anything of the sort to be essential to the Order of Nine Angles praxis. Experience later proved me to be mistaken, but my mindset at the time was that it was purely a hermetic neo-pagan approach to theistic Satanism that was based on personal growth through harsh alchemical change and helping humanity evolve to a higher state of being known as Homo Galactica. I didn't understand at the time that Homo Galactica as a concept was based very much on sort of this Aryan, you know, type of racialist type of thinking. I didn't consider that to be something that applied to me or the people I was working with at the time. Again, I learned later on that I was mistaken. So the Agia Sophotia album does have a certain amount of Order of Nine Angles lore attached to it. Not exclusively, though. There's a lot of more general Luciferian magic. There's a Michael W. Ford Encircling Rite called literally called the Lesser Encircling Rite of the Luciferian that I highlight through the the basic voices of the piece. Each there's eight voices, and each of them corresponds to the eight spirit in the circle casting rite. There's also the rite of Kundak. Kundak is a horse manifestation of the subconscious that could be seen as an extension of an harmonic current. It also deals, there's a piece called Revelry and Revelation that deals with the Morrigan specifically. That's the only thing I've done that really like relates to my own Celtic ancestry or heritage. The Morrigan, as I later found, has a lot in common with Zephane, actually, from the Codex Versum. Our bassist, you know, Chris Cozy, or as he goes by, Resurrectionist. When we were performing a Revelry and Revelation live, he picked up on Zephane as a presence, which is funny because I initially ascribed that piece to the Morrigan. But that was a very intense experience. There's also the Karanzan piece, Vessel 333, which we will never play live. There's the a piece to Lucifer called Hermetitude, a Wrathful Reclamation, that deals with Lucifer in a very rise to fall to rise kind of way. And then, yes, to the very end, there is an arrangement of Agios of Baphomet, which was an Order of Nine Angles chant. And, you know, it makes me sad that I can't perform that one live, but I'm certainly proud of the arrangement. And I think that particular concept of Baphomet as the goddess aspect, you know, holding the severed head of the priest who offers himself willingly, that, you know, there may be a lot of contrast between that and the Goat of Mendes representation of Baphomet, but I don't think they're entirely contradictory. Because you still had that balance of masculine and feminine, order and chaos, light and dark, just from a different angle. And so the Agia Sophotia album was the first, like, really, like, if Black Morning Wintergreen was the first truly occult record that Vilikaus did, Agia Sophotia was a much more focused, decided occultism. And Agia Sophotia came out first, even though the Black Morning album was had been written earlier. So I guess that's an interesting tidbit. And the piece you played actually on the show, Rise and Gulfs and Venom, was part of a split EP I did with a previous colleague that kind of went south. So there's sort of that mini EP now that's literally just called Rise Cleansed. And you have Rise and Gulfs and Venom, which is also a circle casting, right? I'll boy it more of like an energy raising one. And then Cleanse, Dispel, Disperse, which is much more smudging, cleansing, healing. It's, for lack of a better word, the nicest of the occult Vilikaus pieces. You know, it's one that it's meant to have more of a healing and calming energy because that's just the function it serves in the rite. And we tend to like to open and close with Rise and Gulf and Venom and Cleanse, Dispel, Disperse, respectively. As far as the older EPs, there wasn't any concrete occult meaning, but that can be assigned after the fact simply based on the mood or storytelling aspect. For example, we have a piece called The Dying Gasp of a Once Proud Eagle off the very first EP. And, you know, that literally tells a story of an eagle, you know, sailing over the northern skies, gets its wing broken in a blizzard, falls to earth, and then death rises out of the ground, and the scythe comes down. And so you can associate that with the death card of the tarot easily. Or another piece off that EP, Far Beyond Frostbitten. I know, kind of a cheesy title, but that one has sort of a meditative, drony quality that could be, you know, used to sort of reach sort of a blank, not thinking type of consciousness. And the, you know, it was a cult before it was a cult in a very ambiguous way, if that makes any sense. But Vilikos now is certainly a vehicle for my personal spiritual journey. And, you know, I can't concretely predict what that will mean in the future. And that's the beauty of it.
Right on, man. Well, that's all, like, that. I love that whole story. I think that the band has a lot of depth to it, and it definitely has your own personal journey and experiences very much tied into it. And so that makes it a really, unique experience.
Thank you. You know, I think I've done it a disservice. I've been reflecting on this a lot lately. In many ways, some would say I've done it a disservice by calling Vilikos black metal, because as much as it's influenced by that in terms of how I play my riffs on the cello, how I structure the songs, the term black ritual chamber music really captures the totality of it better. We're actually interested in the future, you know, branching out into different scenes like the neo-folk scene or the, you know, sort of the avant-garde or art music scene, as it were. We'd play Renfair if that were offered to us. But, you know, do I feel a personal attachment to black metal? Yes, but not exclusively. And maybe, you know, pigeonholing my work into that type of frame would do it, like I said, a disservice, simply because there is more to it than that.
It definitely sounds like it. And I've heard your music, and it is very expansive. And I think it goes beyond the frigid realms of black metal into a really a category of its own.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And like I said, I've conceptualized and philosophized and pontificated about black metal as the supposed chosen music for a very long time. And I'm, you know, as I enter my 30s and a new stage of my artistic and spiritual and personal journey, I hope to not go necessarily totally away from that, but certainly beyond its borders.
Yeah, of course. So we're about to wrap up here, but before we do you have any kind of personal, really weird, crazy experiences that are either tied to the music, the occultism, or just weird stuff in general that you want to talk about and share?
I would say that my initiation into the coven, the chapel of Vedantic Nihilism, would be a pretty intense experience. My girlfriend was there and witnessed this, so we have a corroborating witness. The when I was effectively summoning Moloch and Zelzimon from the Codex as part of my initiation, there was sort of a flicker of skull-like wraiths that were dancing around in the candles that had very distinct faces that were manifesting in the shadows on the wall. And my girlfriend saw that. And the there was also a shadow figure that moved clearly across the room. And all this was happening while I was meditating on something that manifested really like the Eye of Sauron from Lord of the Rings. Moloch and the fictional character of Sauron actually have more in common than you'd think. Just in terms of like the Fire King, as it were. There's also been some pretty intense experiences that the audience has had during our live rituals. There's one time we were playing a little dive bar with some townies that weren't even there to, you know, see us. And this one drunk middle-aged guy just is like, "Wow, they're opening up a portal, bro." And like the, you know, that same night, my friend, who is, you know, arguably a seer, saw some apparitions whizzing in and out of the stage. We saw, or someone saw the stage shift. Someone else heard their dead sister speak to them. All these experiences that other people have had have occurred during our live ritual performances.
That's really intense.
Well, yeah, it is. It's been a ride, that's for sure.
I can definitely tell. Well, Kovnix, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm going to post all your links in the description below. I definitely want to have you on with Kane, with Chris, with, you know, a bunch of other people, because I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. I like talking to you, and those are my favorite people, so let's plumb the depths.
All right, man. Well, you have a great night.
You as well. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
Have a good night.
You too. That was my conversation with Vince Vall of Mara and Cacophonix of Velikaus. I really, really enjoyed talking to both these people, and I'm very excited to have them back on the show. I also want to thank everybody who's been sticking along for the show so far. We try our best, and it really helps to have you guys here. Everybody's links will be in the show notes below. As I said in the beginning, we do have our Patreon up. If you want to get extra content and support the show, that is the best way to do so. It's only $4 a month, and you get a ton of new stuff. With that, thank you so much. Have a good night.